Accession number 18569, Reel 3.
Colonel Mayor, Reel 3.
We fired rapid and it had the desired effect, to the extent that when we arrived on the position, people had got virtually the same response as if they'd been under shell fire. I can remember the chap I arrived opposite was in fact with his back end presented to me, his head in a compost heap, his fingers in his ears. And nobody taught me what to do when confronted with an enemy in that attitude. I wasn't sure whether I should stick a bayonet in his bottom, or shoot him in the bottom, or kick him up the backside, or what. In fact, I tapped him on his steel helmet and said, "Oi." We did have problems, because in fact we took virtually instantly something like 30 prisoners. I only had about 27, 28 men in the platoon. And one wanted to make sure that they weren't going to wake up and come to and become aggressive again. And what we did, we basically took their weapons off them and broke as many as we could so that they wouldn't be able to pick up weapons and do anything. Because the other thing one needed to do, one needed to maintain the momentum. And so while some of the platoon were doing that, one was trying desperately to get as far through the village, because it was the edge of the village, as possible.
Can you give me the name of the village again, please?
Vasseveld. And in fact, we got, I suppose, something like a couple of hundred yards through the village where the houses thinned out and there was a road. And as a platoon, we went firm there. As an illustration of the effect that our rapid fire had had, the remainder of the company, because the noise came straight out of dead silence in the middle of the night, the whole company went to ground. So it was not only the opposition who went to ground, it was our own side went to ground as well. But it's an illustration of what surprise can do. Anyway, when we were firm on the far end of the, or sufficiently through the village, while we were there, a German half-track with the crew sitting in the prescribed manner with the rifles between their knees like this drove up the road, which we'd been following. And in fact, I was with my Piat crew about 5 yards off the road, and we were behind some bean sticks. The Piat crew engaged this half-track as it went past. The Piat didn't function. I mean, it's the Piat bomb went, but it didn't go off. I think probably just as well, because I have a suspicion that we would have become casualties as well. The number two on the Piat disappeared backwards, about as fast as the Piat bomb disappeared forwards. Because I think he reckoned that this was what was going to happen. Anyway, the vehicle went past us. I regret to say it also passed my leading section without being engaged. As a result of that, I had some fairly sharp words with my leading section and explained that I didn't expect that to happen again. The outcome of that was a poor, wretched German runner on a bicycle came down the road in the opposite direction. He hadn't got any brakes on his bicycle, and I regret to say he received rapid fire from a section who was smarting from my comments, which didn't do him any good at all, I regret to say.
What happened to him?
Oh, he was dead. I suppose all one can say, you know, you need luck in war. And sometimes you have it and sometimes you don't. Actually, another example of luck, when we were in Zanton, rushing a house with one of the soldiers, one of my soldiers, we tripped over a wire in the front garden. It was the edge of the front garden, between the road and the front garden. And we didn't see it at all, and it was about ankle high. And the result was we both went headlong and slid down the front garden path. Exactly as that happened, a chap in the house let go a burst at us. But I think it all happened at exactly the same time, and he thought he'd scored a bullseye because so we'd both gone absolutely flat. And he didn't. He then disappeared. But the soldier, at lunchtime, when he took his small pack off, he discovered that a bullet had entered his small pack on the unblanketed bit of the small pack where it touches your back. And the bullet had gone, entered the pack there, and had come out where you do the straps up. So, I mean, the timing of that was fairly crucial, to say the least. But his comment was, what bloody bad luck, straight through my tin of 50 cigarettes. Not realising that, you know, the timing of it not having gone straight through him was extremely lucky. I mean, the unblanketed bit is only about 6 inches square, where it touches your back. So goodness knows what attitude he was in when it went through there.
So back to Vasseveld.
Well, that was really it. We'd managed to take the prisoners. 188 got away. But the battalion went firm and went. There was a dike or a canal a little further on, and they consolidated up to there, and that's where we spent the night. We were relaunched again as leading battalion the next night. again in a big long column. But this time, although we were still the leading battalion, we weren't in kangaroos. We were, in fact, in TCVs as the leading battalion. We were scratching our heads a bit, thinking, has the staff got its staff work right, that we're actually doing leading battalion in TCVs? So it was a bit of a nerve-wracking night, because obviously there were no lights. There was a convoy light, which was on the rear differential, really, little bit of light there, but that's all you could look at. So as the platoon commander, the other one was sitting in the front of the TCV, with the platoon in the back of the TCV. I had no radio. I didn't have a map. I didn't know where I was going. I was merely following the back end of the truck in front, hoping for the best. There was a bit of a hiccup at one stage, because a German towed 88 joined the column, not realising that it was an English column and not a German column, and it pulled into the column. And there was a bit of a hiccup while its error was pointed out to it.
Did this involve firing?
No, there wasn't any firing, no. I think it realised it had got a problem. but there was a bit of a hiccup. Because I know my company commander suggested that it might be sensible if some of the armour in the column, because there'd been a break in the column, took the lead of the bit that had been left behind. And he was jolly nearly arrested for failing to go forward in his soft-skinned vehicle. However, all made life slightly more interesting. And after various incidents which involved bits of the column further ahead, we arrived in a place called Lochem, which was a town in Holland, which I think basically had been the base for a German NCO training establishment. And they, who didn't appear to have terribly sophisticated weapons, but they fought jolly well, and they were really quite good shots. I mean, running across open spaces, they tended to be hitting about 1 in 5, which is rifle fire at 300 yards, is not bad. The interesting thing I find, I mean, it took us, we'd been travelling all night, and we didn't actually get onto our objective until about 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening. And we'd basically done 24 hours, and that was our third night that one really hadn't had any sleep. And 24 hours really without any food. We were getting fairly knackered by then. to the extent that I can remember, one of the companies on our left getting onto their objective, and basically the company passed out on the objective. They were in fire positions, but they were not effective to the extent that our company second in command had to take a patrol across to take people prisoner who were trying to give themselves up to them. And I regret to say there was an incident where one of the sections I saw, it rushed a house, and I think there were five of them rushing it, something like that. Three of them were dropped within about 5 yards of the house, and the other two got into the house. But the remainder of that platoon did not move, including the officer. And I regret to say, in A Company, by then there was another platoon commander, but he was sacked at the end of that day. I mean, it's sad, but these things do happen.
Could you understand it?
He hadn't been there very long, so I mean, all one can say really, his endurance was less than really it needed to be. However, it's better that he should go early than that he should put his soldiers at risk. I mean, I regret to say, even in peacetime, as a company commander, I removed an officer when we were involved in internal security in British Guiana. I mean, he was a terribly nice chap. He ran our mess accounts. One needed to find an excuse for him to go back to Jamaica and run the mess accounts, because otherwise he was going to get somebody killed. Now, I think if an officer isn't able to cope sufficiently well, it is better that some other job is found for him, where he isn't going to put his soldiers' lives at risk, unduly at risk. Yeah, I mean, you're always putting your soldiers' lives at risk, but not to a greater extent than is needed. So the other thing that I remember about Lockham particularly, I hadn't realised, in fact, Varsifelt and Lockham was over the Easter weekend, and I hadn't realised that in fact, when we got onto our objective in Lockham, it was 6 o'clock on Easter evening. And it wasn't until talking with the Dutch occupants of the house on which we were based at the end of the day that I discovered it was Easter Day. Because they were saying, you've only been here an hour and you've got a hot meal delivered to you. You've got your mail delivered to you. We haven't seen post for about 3 months. And, you know, they just couldn't believe it, that within an hour of our arriving there, there was a hot meal and post. But I think the relevant thing is that is such an important element to infantry. The support that they are given by their administrative tail. I mean, the Americans were flabbergasted by the support that we got compared to their support. A, the quality of our food, and be the way it was delivered to us. That's really, I think, Lockham.
Did you take many prisoners there?
We took a number of prisoners. I don't know the total number. As a platoon, we didn't, because we didn't actually arrive on any defended locality. I mean, it was Lockham, actually, where I was... not terribly clever, standing near the muzzle of a tank gun. But
you were telling me that earlier, how you got deafened.
Yes. There was one incident. I saw a German stretcher bearer taken prisoner. And he went straight out, having been taken prisoner, he went straight out to attend a couple of our wounded, being shot at by his own side, and we in fact sent him back as a prisoner with a citation. And I mention that because in fact there were at least two occasions, there were certainly two occasions, when our own stretcher bearers were shot at close range. And when I say close range, I'm talking about 20 yards, having first stretcher bearer having been either killed or wounded. Second stretcher bearer stuck his flag into the ground beside the wounded man and was again made a casualty. And in the 11 weeks I was with the company in Northwest Europe in action, we lost all four of our stretcher bearers.
What kind of flag did he stick in the ground?
Put a hand flag, you know, about that square with a pole.
What was on the flag? A red cross?
Red cross. The second time, actually, was when we were street fighting in Bremen. The chap had won an MM about 3 months before and was killed. It didn't please our soldiers terribly much, as you can imagine. They were pretty angry.
So let's take it on from Lockham, please.
From Lockham, that was our last major battle till we got into Germany. We had minor skirmishes, on the road through from Oldenzaal on the Dutch border, heading up towards Bremen. It was a minor sort of skirmish. I mean, I think one of the interesting things during that period, we actually took a U-boat commander prisoner when he was visiting his home. He was furious, as you can imagine. But one didn't really expect to take a U-boat commander prisoner on dry land. But our last battle, really, was street fighting in Bremen. And we were involved in clearing a road on the edge of the Burger Park in Bremen. And there were two above-ground bunkers, air raid shelter-type bunkers, about four or five stories. One of those was a civilian air raid shelter. The other was headquarters Bremen Garrison. Which had an SS garrison, and there were also Marines up in some of the houses on the side of the street. It was rather like Park Lane. I mean, the houses were three or four stories on one side of the avenue, and the other side, the avenue was the park. So it was rather like street fighting up Park Lane. We had Churchill crocodile flamethrowers with us, because I can remember the commander of the crocodile saying, should I flay the first bunker we came to, saying, should he flame it? And I said, not until we're fired at from it. And we weren't fired at it from it, and thank goodness we didn't flame it. It had about 1,000, 1,500 German women and children in it, and if we'd flamed it, it would have killed the lot. So, you know, it would have been very difficult to live with that. But the stretcher bearer who won the MC was, won the MM rather, was killed just outside one of the houses. He'd been attending to a wounded chap. And after that,